We're ready for the next case. Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. The next case on our calendar today is A23-1635, Roger Sand versus Sand Pine Pheasants Family Recreation LLC. As you know, we are proceeding by Zoom today, but the same procedures apply. Each party will have 15 minutes for your initial argument, and appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. We ask that you introduce yourself and the party you represent at the beginning of your argument. We are recording the oral argument today, and no other recordings are permitted except with the express prior permission of the Minnesota Court of Appeals. So with that, counsel for appellant, you can proceed when you're ready, or appellant, I should say.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. I am Patrick Summers from the DeWitt Law Firm, representing defendants and appellants Keith Sand and Sand Pine Pheasants Family Recreation LLC. This is an appeal from a judgment entered after a court trial in this matter. We respectfully ask that the court reverse the decision of the trial court and order an equal division of partner assets between these 50-50 partners, Keith Sand and Roger Sand, among other relief noted. This appeal was timely filed. This was a court trial with a decision based upon equity, a written partnership agreement, and the Minnesota Partnership Act, Chapter 323A. This involves the dissolution of a Minnesota family farm partnership, Sand Pines Dairy, a Minnesota general partnership, which was controlled by a written partnership agreement with an amendment. At the time of trial, there were two equal partners, Keith and Roger Sand. On occasion, I may refer to them as Keith or Roger, just for purposes of clarity between the Sands. There are five primary errors made by the trial court in this matter. One, the unequal division of the assets of the partnership, which Roger Sand himself agrees is uneven, despite there being these two partners being 50-50 partners and no basis in the record, statute, case law, or partnership agreement for such an uneven division of the assets. Two, finding that Roger Sand could sell assets of the partnership and keep the proceeds without an accounting or debit for his share of the partnership assets. Three, the trial court created a new duty to contribute to the success of a partnership, despite the absence of such a duty in the Partnership Act, case law, or the partnership agreement, and then finding that Keith Sand breached this new duty by not helping sufficiently Roger Sand to perform Roger Sand's agreed duties, despite Keith Sand's performance of his own assigned duties and Roger's failure to perform his own work. Four, the trial court erred in concluding that Keith Sand breached a statutory duty of good faith and fair dealing based in part on Keith Sand's earlier unsuccessful proposal to purchase Eileen Sand's share of the partnership, despite no requirement that he give notice to Roger Sand, who in fact had full knowledge of the proposal as he was at the meeting which discussed it. And five, the trial court erred in not ordering a first right of refusal on future sales of partnership property, despite the clear requirement in the amendment to the partnership agreement and the wishes of Roger Sand. First, on the uneven distribution of the assets, there's no dispute that Roger Sand was awarded more of the assets than his equal partner. Equity does not permit a trial court to simply distribute the assets of the partnership at will. There must be some. So,
can I interrupt you there? I think you just said there's no dispute that the distribution was unequal.
Yes, Your Honor, I believe that to be true, both objectively in terms of the listing in the from the evidence and in the trial court's order as the value of the personal property and of the real property assets. And in addition, in Roger Sand's responsive brief, they do not deny that the division of the assets resulted in more value going to Roger Sand than to Keith Sand, the equal partners.
The acreage was about equal, isn't that correct?
Certainly the acreage is equal, Your Honor, but as in a lot of land, the values are different in that, for example, on the property awarded to Roger Sand, he was awarded all of the buildings. The only buildings on Keith Sand's property were buildings that he built with his own money. and were not partnership assets. In addition, it's evident that from the appraisal record that this property is not all cropland. There's some crop and a lot of land that's of lesser value. It's for recreational use only, marshland, swampy land. And as evident from the aerial photographs included in our brief and in other submissions, as well as from the appraisals, the value, the property acreage awarded to Key Sand simply has less value. In addition, Roger Sand was awarded more of a considerably more frontage on Norway Road. So I would assert that it's objectively less valuable land was awarded to Key Sand than to Roger Sand.
Key Sand, you would agree, originally was in favor of a just and equitable dissolution of the partnership in kind, right? Rather than a public sale that would have resulted in what you're asking for now, a 50-50 distribution of all assets based on their value.
In terms of how the partnership assets are redistributed, yes, I agree that both Roger and Key Sand did request a division of the property in kind. However, that does not mean that he agreed to something less than a 50-50 distribution. And I would assert that it is possible for the court to have made a 50-50 distribution in value of the assets in kind and not to make an uneven distribution in kind.
Can you agree there's some... Oh, go ahead, Judge Smith.
Well, no, finish your question. I'll follow up.
Oh, I was just going to ask if you agree that there is some level of discretion afforded to the district court in trying to accomplish an equitable distribution of the partnership assets in kind, particularly when the goal was to, as I understand it, was to allow both parties to continue operating the respective businesses that they had established within the partnership, the recreational pheasant hunting for your client and then the dairy farm for the respondent. How do you respond to that?
I would agree, Your Honor, that there certainly is discretion, but I would assert that discretion has to be within the context of a 50-50 distribution. Because again, these are equal partners. Both the Partnership Act and the partnership agreement talks about how dissolutions proceed. And part of that process is supposed to be payment of debts and then looking at contributions of the parties and basically doing an accounting. The court didn't do that. So by definition, at the end of the trial process, these are 50-50 partners. There were no finding that Roger Sand had contributed more in the terms of assets in an accounting and was thus entitled to receipt of more than a 50% share of the partnership assets.
Following up on Judge Eade's question, this is an equitable action, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And the court in its determination determined that Keith Sand had not acted basically in good faith in the partnership. So how does that square with your argument that you have to divide it equally, where the court found that Keith had not acted in good faith?
Well, I appreciate the court's question, and that touches on something I was going to touch on a little bit later. But that the trial court appears to kind of build around this newly created duty to contribute to the success of a partnership. There's nothing in the partnership agreement that requires the parties to do anything. The parties agreed on a division of labor. Who was going to do what? Roger Sand running the dairy, Keith Sand basically doing everything else in terms of, and I've listed all those duties and obligations. And so given this absence of a duty, kind of creating a straw man that finding that Keith breached this duty by not helping Roger Sand out enough. There's no obligation for him to help him. Aside from that, certainly evidence that he did, and evidence that Key Sand, he performed his duties that he was supposed to do, as had been agreed upon by these two equal partners in terms of divvying up the workload for the operation of the dairy facility. So I think there are some restrictions in terms of equity, and particularly if this finding is, you know, that this decision is based in some part on the conclusion that there was a failure to contribute to the success of the partnership. In addition, the other aspect of that determination was based upon this earlier unsuccessful effort by my client to purchase the shares of Eileen Sand in the partnership, which also can't serve as a basis for this unequal distribution for a variety of reasons. One being Eileen Sand had an obligation to tell Roger Sand about Keith Sand's efforts to purchase her share. Also, he was present at the meeting where this was discussed. And at the end of the day, it was rejected. Eileen Sand did not sell to Keith Sand. And the partnership was eventually, her interest was purchased jointly by Keith Sand and Roger Sand, as set forth in the record.
Let me follow up on that.
Certainly.
Is there anything that indicates what how that figured in the distribution, the failure to offer Keith Roger the opportunity to purchase from Eileen Sand?
Your Honor, oh,
go ahead.
I appreciate the court's question because that is the question. I can't find any connection. That's one of the issues here. If this is based upon equity, the court makes some conclusions, but didn't find any damages, found no monetary effect on Roger Sand whatsoever. I think it's candidly fair to say that the trial court didn't care for Keith Sand, perhaps. I mean, that comes through in some of the language, but that certainly has no relevance as to the division of the partnership assets. And when we look at the other things, you know, the court said, Keith Sand didn't help Roger enough. Well, there was no, aside from all the issues I just talked about in terms of the duty, there's no finding of a damage. In addition,
I agree with you about the damage, but going back to the piece about the court finding that Keith didn't help Roger, and you were talking about their different roles, didn't the court also find that that Keith hindered Roger by controlling the checkbook and not agreeing to allow him to hire help at the going rate at a market wage?
That is a finding the court made. Obviously, we had some disagreements with it, but that was the decision of the court. But again, there's no connection between Keith performing his duties of running the checkbook, doing the bookkeeping. Court found, as an aside, that Roger Sand was not good at running the books, but no connection between that and causing any harm to Roger Sand or any issues. And in terms of work being provided, I mean, there was extensive testimony and information and evidence provided about the help that was hired by Keith Sand to help Roger in the operation of the dairy. I don't think that there's a sufficient basis in fact to support this uneven distribution.
Would you say that the court's goal in the division was to ensure that to be consistent with the party's request that the division be in kind and that they both be able to continue the respective businesses?
That was certainly the court states that was the court's goal in how the assets were divided. But that being said, such a division could have been made on an equal footing and not the unequal division that was done here, and still permit the dairy Roger Sand to continue with the dairy farm operation, and also Keith Sand to continue with his business interests, which were
I'm sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to ask you before time winds down, if we agree with you that about your arguments regarding the breach of obligation of good faith and fair dealing, why can't we just affirm on the statutory equitable ground on 323A.045B2, and that being the basis for the in-kind distribution? And lastly, it seems to me the part of your argument conflates the idea that the district court's equitable order to accomplish an in-kind distribution of assets necessarily needed to be monetarily equal. And I don't know that. Well, I would like to know the basis for your argument that it had to be, as a matter of assets, exactly equal.
Well, and I appreciate the court's question. And I would say, one, in terms of the equal distribution, the case law provides an in-kind distribution if it can be performed without prejudicing one of the parties. And I would certainly assert we've prejudiced Keysan in this decision. The other aspect of it is that equity doesn't mean the court can just go completely off the reservation, I would suggest. And I would suggest the court should have followed the clear language of the partnership agreement and the statute, which provides for equalization between these two 50-50 partners. And I think it was possible and should have been an in-kind distribution with equal values between the two parties, given that there was no basis to not proceed in that fashion. I see my time is up. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, you can proceed when you're ready.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is David Johnson. I'm an attorney representing the plaintiff respondent, Roger Sand. Judge Schultz issued a very detailed and thorough order after trial in this matter. It was comprehensive and entirely explained her basis for every conclusion that she made therein. There's simply no error in this proceeding, and the order of the district court should be affirmed. First, to touch on the standard of review, I think we're in abuse of discretion here. This is an equitable proceeding. The judge does have some leeway on crafting an equitable proceeding as it's set out in the statute, Minnesota statute 323.A.0405. So just based on that, there is some leeway in, how she finalizes her order and comes up with an order that makes sense in the circumstances. And as has been noted, part of the order, has to do with what the partners were doing. And my client, Roger Sand, was operating the dairy and just the logistics of it and the situation of the land in regard to the dairy, it had to be distributed this way to split the land somewhat equally. And, we don't necessarily acknowledge that there is a big discrepancy in value. I think much of what counsel was saying about the value of the land and the value of these assets are not in the record and are not supplied. There may be some variation based on what is in the record, but I think it necessarily has to be just based on what what the parties were doing and the roles within the partnership and trying to unwind this. So even But that's not the entire basis for the order, though, either. There were breaches by Keith Sand in here, and they're pretty thoroughly set out in the order. There was the failure to contribute. There was the fact that that he took the checkbook away from Roger Sand. He tried to unilaterally purchase his mother's interest and even tried to sue or threatened a lawsuit with a letter from an attorney's office to enforce a verbal agreement on that.
What damage did that cause? I don't understand how that relates to any monetary amount.
Yeah, I think that's a legitimate question, and it's hard to tie that specifically to it, but there's still no question that there's a breach to a partnership and a breach to your partners. This duty
that... Do you think that the conclusion that there was a breach affected the distribution by the district court?
I don't know that it did. I think that just, partially within the statute, just the equitable statute, to allow the court to divide these assets. I don't know what the judge was doing, but she certainly cited that. And as a dish, if there was an inequality and that affected, the distribution, which I don't know, I don't think it's clear in the order whether it affected the distribution or not, but certainly these breaches, were very present in the order and certainly impacted the judge decision in some amount. And I believe that you know, I think opposing counsel, you know, tries to simplify this down to the partnership agreement and to the partnership dissolution statute, but there's so many more things that apply. We've got the duty of good faith and fair dealing. We've got the, you know, the control of the partnership breach.
But say we disagree with you on that, and what we're left with then is whether or not the decision below was correct based purely on the statute and the exercise of equitable power. What's your response to Mr. Summers' argument that the limit regarding prejudice to his client was exceeded here in the distribution of the assets that the district court ordered?
Well, I don't think it was. I go back, if we're just looking at that without these other breaches that, you know, I believe create an independent claim and an independent basis for this inequality, but even taking those away, you know, this thing was divided in kind. So, you know, Keith Sands able to operate his pheasant operation on the land awarded to him and the assets awarded to him. The assets awarded, you know, the whole background and the concept of this partnership was to operate a dairy, and Roger was operating the dairy. So many of what was, and it was clear that he was going to continue to operate the dairy, and Keith Sand was going to get out of operating the dairy. So, you know, just based on that alone, the land awarded him, you know, gives him enough land to be able to, you know, feed the cows. You know, the equipment that was awarded to him is the equipment that was, you know, historically used in the operation of the dairy. And the buildings that were awarded to him were the dairy itself and the living, you know, where he and his mother live and continue to live. So
would that have been possible under the proposed land division that Keith Sand had initially had asked for before the district court?
No, it wouldn't have been. You know, it was very limited what he had asked for as far as land and equipment goes to Roger. There's no way he would have been able to operate a dairy. And that was clear that he wanted to continue to operate the dairy. But I don't remember the exact acreage that was proposed by it, but it was, you know, 90% of the land was proposed to go to Keith Sand, which would completely prevent Roger Sand from being able to continue to operate. So, again, going back to that, taking, you know, aside from these breaches, you know, just unwinding the partnership based on what's happened and what was going to happen in the future, this court order makes complete sense.
Can I ask? I'm sorry. Do you agree that the distribution was unequal?
Not necessarily. I mean, there's some.
Okay. This is why I ask. If it's equal, then why the language about the breach and all that? Because then there was no award for any of that. So either there was, do you understand what I'm getting at?
I think so.
Okay, because if it's equal, then there was no award for any type of bad faith or anything else that Keith might have done or not done. So I'm trying to figure out how we come to this resolution and how all that fits together.
Well, again, I don't know that it can be exactly equal. And there are, you know, figures and amounts, you know, valuations that were submitted to the court. And, you know, I think if you do go through those in the court order, you could find that they're not exactly equal. So I can't, you know, argue, you know, legitimately that this was an entirely equal distribution. But again, I don't know if there is inequality, if it was, you know, based on the need and the need of the parties going forward for what their operations were going to be, or if they were, you know, somewhat tied to these breaches and you know, going back to these breaches, I mean, these would be independent claims, you know, and having the court find that these duties were breached, there would be a basis for an award of damages just simply based on those. And I know the court didn't, you know, find specific damages related to, you know, those amounts, but it certainly provides another basis beyond the 323.0405, you know, for an unequal distribution of assets, if indeed they are unequal. And you know, going back to that decision, that, you know, that there, Mr. Summers was commenting that, you know, there's some valuable land and there's some, you know, more productive land and more recreational scrap, but there was no, you know, testimony or no evidence submitted, you know, on any of that. So I don't know how we really conclude on that issue.
Going back to the distribution, in appellant's brief, they focus on the partnership agreement and the language in the partnership agreement governing the dissolution process. And looking at page 19 of their brief, paragraph C of the language provides that distribution to the partners in it provides that upon dissolution, the partnership will be distributed according to the following priority, and it's A, B, and C. And then C is distribution to the partners in accordance with their percentage of contributions as set forth herein of any remaining assets of the partnership. It was the distribution ordered by the district court consistent with that paragraphs or clause C? And if not, is that language controlling in this situation?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the court was impacted by that. The, you know, the contributions to the partnership, there was significant evidence from the family members here. I mean, this is a large farming family, and you know, the brothers and sisters testified and testified, you know, credibly that Roger was doing 90% of the work for this partnership. So if that, you know, is considered a contribution, which I certainly think it would be, you know, that may serve as an independent basis for an unequal distribution, again, if it indeed was unequal.
So in your view, the distribution ordered by the district court is consistent with that language?
Distribution ordered by the court, I'm sorry, I missed that.
It's consistent with the language in?
Yes.
In the partnership agreement governing the dissolution process?
Yeah, and so it was based on the contributions. It doesn't say, you know, 50-50 distribution based on a dissolution. So between that and, you know, the statutory rights for the court to do what pleases, you know, there's certainly a basis in law and in the contract for the distribution that was made.
Thank you.
I don't know that I have anything remaining. I think I've stated my arguments. I think the court understands our position on this. So unless there's further questions from your honors, I think I'll concede the remaining 3 minutes.
I don't have any other questions.
Nothing further. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Any rebuttal? You'll have 5 minutes, and hopefully you can see the timer on the grid view.
Yes, I can. Thank you, Your Honor.
Great.
I wanted to follow up on the court's most recent question regarding that section 18 subpart C and whether the court followed on that. And I, as I understand counsel's argument, it sounds like he's saying, well, Roger contributed additional work, and that should be form a basis for this unequal division. And I would point the court to the extensive analysis in the trial court's own opinion that partners can't be compensated for their services to the partnership. That's statutory case law. It's detailed at length there. So these two parties, they both worked for the partnership. We would have certainly don't agree with the court's any sort of assertion that Keysand didn't contribute a lot of work to the success of the partnership. But I would certainly say that the work that they perform for the partnership can't be form a basis for an unequal distribution, because those aren't contributions.
And didn't the district court recognize that in its order?
Oh, yeah. And that's what I'm saying. So I think 100% agree. I actually cite to that in my own brief and right now, and that the court acknowledged that. So that can't be a basis for the unequal distribution.
But then how does paragraph 18C work then? If it's not a contribution by the amount of work, I mean, you're framing contribution as it sounds to me like you're taking what your counterpart argued and you're turning it on its head and saying that contribution equals compensation for the work done. If what would be the alternative interpretation of 18C? Would it be that then every time that, well, anytime this partnership, when this partnership was dissolved, that it needed to be just split 50-50 because they were 50-50 partners? And if so, why didn't the language of the partnership agreement reflect that? Instead, it uses the term contribution, which seems to me to contemplate the work put into it in furtherance of the partnership.
Appreciate the court's question. Money. I mean, I think just to put a blunt thing, contribution would be assets contributed, you know, a capital call, for example, or some instance where one or the other partners contributed more money than the other. I mean, this would be a fairly standard dissolution of any partnership. They have an accounting, figure out who put in what. In this case, there is no evidence of, you know, specific contributions from either partners, which means at the end of the day, when we come to the dissolution, it's got to be 50-50. We can't.
Wouldn't you agree though that the partnership language could be a little clearer, that it was excluding or intended only to include equity or other assets and not sweat equity, as it were?
Appreciate it. I don't know that it would need to, given that, you know, the case law and whatnot saying that you can't get payment for compensation for work. In addition, the partnership agreement itself has a section for, you know, compensation, and it's reserved. There's nothing in there. You know, they never, when this partnership was created and the agreement that governed this partnership for all these years, they never provided for either party to receive any specific benefit or reallocation of assets based upon nature, quality, amount of work that they provided, that each partner provided to the partnership. So I would argue that that can't form the basis for the court's decision. And I circle back, as noted by the court, in terms of these other, you know, the breaches and whatnot that were found, and I rest on the legal issues that I've raised there. But functionally, at the end of the day, court didn't find any damages, didn't assign any dollar value to any of this. So that means that there's no basis in the record for an inequitable, uneven distribution of the partnership assets in anything other than a 50-50 distribution. And I would assert that this, also just a note in terms of the standard review, this isn't purely an equitable case. There are some legal decisions that are reviewed de novo, particularly the court's determination and creation of this new duty to contribute to the success of a partnership, which, again, I assert doesn't have any basis in the contract documents, statute, or case law. And a variety of other issues, which we've, I believe, addressed in our response, in our briefing in this matter. Unless the court has any further questions, I would request that the court reverse the decision of the trial court and grant the relief as set forth in the briefs which have been filed on behalf of the appellants in this matter. And thank you, the court, for their consideration of this appeal. Thank you.
Thank you to both counsel. Your briefing and arguments are of great assistance to the court. We will issue our opinion within the statutory time frame.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you.